Blood, the official True Blood podcast. I'm Kristen Bauer.
And I'm Deborah Ann Wool.
And you've been invited in.
I want to do bad things with you.
Welcome back to Truest Blood, where we sink our fangs into the series episode by episode.
This week's episode is aptly titled Frenzy, written by showrunner and creator Alan Ball and directed by True Blood veteran Dan Minahan.
Oh my gosh, what a crew! Alan and Dan! After sharing our highlights for episode 211, we'll reveal all the complexities and joys of working with teacup humans, otherwise known as children. Then we invite you to join us as we reminisce with the extraordinary Rutina Wesley. We've raved about her work since the beginning, and Rutina is still kicking this industry's ass.
Oh, well, she got her start as a breakout star in How She Move before committing to 7 years on True Blood as Tara Thornton, which garnered her an NAACP Image Award nomination. To then do another beautiful 7 seasons leading Queen Sugar, for which she has won 3 Black Reel Awards and earned 5 more NAACP nominations.
So incredible. Rutina effortlessly balances work ethic with spontaneous creativity. And we see her in full force this week on True Blood.
We pick up with Bill encountering Queen Sophie Ann, dabbing blood off her lips fresh from the woman on the chaise. Still, Bill gets right to the point. He needs help dispatching a maenad. She informs him blithely that maenads cannot be killed. It seems Marianne believed she was immortal, and therefore she was.
Never underestimate the power of blind faith. It can manifest in ways that bend the laws of physics or break them entirely.
Speaking of physics, Sophie Anne seems in a perpetual state of rest. If Bill wants to know more, he'll have to wait her out.
Meanwhile, back in Bon Tom, Tara's mind may have returned, but her heart is still with eggs. While she works on her mother to let her go, Sookie and Lafayette commiserate on the down and upsides of ingesting Eric Northman's blood.
Somebody need to slap that bitch.
I have.
Look at you.
Have you had any dreams about him?
Speaking of the upsides, Tara manages to break free and go after her true love, with Lafayette and Sookie in hot pursuit. But Marianne proves too strong for her and once again brings Tara under her spell.
Jason and Andy, men of action and fragile egos, head to the police station to arm themselves, taking on the role of town protectors and unlikely allies.
Because this town might be full of crazy rednecks and dumbasses. But they're still Americans, Andy.
Speaking of Americans, having saved his mother from his new girlfriend, Hoyt tries to get his mama to see reason. But instead, she brings out some family skeletons that make him reconsider his choice.
Back at Merlot's, Sam happens upon Arlene's kids hiding in the woods and takes them under his wing. He then heads to Fantasia to ask Eric to help with their maenad problem. Eric agrees, and it seems great minds think alike as he too visits the Queen as Bill leaves with a plan and the Queen's disturbing farewell.
Enjoy your restricted diet. I do look forward to meeting her.
Speaking of Bill's restricted diet, Sookie explores the horror show that is now Gran's house, finding a large egg and a nest, and staring into the eyes of a zombified Lafayette. So, Deb, it's always hard to pick a highlight.
It is.
Right? And,
But I always feel like I'm leaving someone out, you know? Everyone's a highlight, but we gotta pick.
I know. Almost every scene I go, oh, I gotta. Oh,
I know.
No, next scene. But so I just gotta go with Queen Sophie Ann.
I mean, long live the queen.
Right? Long live the queen. I mean, what the F is going on with this lady? Evan Rachel Wood is so staggering always. And
it's a great introduction for her character.
Right?
Yeah.
The dress, the shoes, the walk, the room, the dialogue, the delivery.
I even like, you know, they gave her all this great frivolous business because obviously we have the Yahtzee coming up, but the compact, the music, the magazines, you know, it's all in this sort of, you know, languorous place of rest and relaxation. Yeah.
In the commentary, wasn't it Alan Ball who said that this was the first time we saw a vampire putting on makeup?
Yes, I think he did say that.
Because they were looking for business for her. Mm-hmm. And they were like, should she be looking through records? What should she be doing? And then Evan, that's right, she asked for the compact.
Asked for a compact.
Yeah.
Which is great. You know, I think, you know, clearly there's some vanity involved in this character. I think they described her as a Norma Desmond type, which you'll know from Sunset Boulevard. It's the famous, I am big. It's the pictures that got small.
It's so good.
Which fits this character to a T.
It fits this character and all her dialogue because she actually has informational dialogue.
Oof, this is hard dialogue to make actionable, right?
It is, to break it up and to have a viewpoint on each little segment, to fill it with business and character and inflection. It's very hard to do that. You have a lot to remember, and she's doing business while she says it. So her first line, I love all of it, but let's play her first line.
What gives you the right to say no to the femoral blood of a good woman? You know what your problem is, William? You are a snob. I hate snobs. Tiny, tiny souls, or penises, or both.
That is such an Alan Ball line.
It's such an Alan Ball line and delivered with such deft. It's like Michelle Forbes does this. She, every line is like six lines where the specificity and colors and layers that Michelle puts in every, I almost highlighted later when she walks in the room when Tara has come back.
Yeah.
And is with eggs. I mean, it's just ridiculous. These actresses are so ridiculously
so good. It's the talent meeting the opportunity with these lines. Because even that scene you're talking about with Michelle, you know, she has that line about, and that, you know, that night out in the woods with that unfortunate pharmacist. Like, something about that phrase, unfortunate pharmacist. Again, like... Alan. So, but you know, it could be great writing and the actor doesn't rise to the challenge, or it could be poor writing and the actor, you know, is lifting it, elevating it in some way. But, you know, it's these moments when the two come together, like all of this material with the queen, that where it really just sings.
And then on the day, right, like the other thing HBO afforded was, well, literally afforded because you had so much time.
Yes.
Right. Which is money, right? It's budget. And you had the time and the space and you had Dan Minahan directing. We always had these great directors that would relish and look for more, you know, where you could get every drop was valued.
So let's then jump from that to what Suzuki and our art department did with this fucking insane location.
Insane.
So this is a mansion on the ocean in Malibu. So there's the indoor pool that you see on the show, but just outside the doors there's an outdoor pool just a little down the hill.
Yeah,
and then of course there's the Pacific Ocean beyond that.
Choices.
So you gotta like water. And pretty much absolutely everything is made of shells. So the chandeliers you'll see, the mosaics, the statues. Apparently the crew was so terrified of breaking anything in that space that they were, I guess, literally walking on eggshells.
Yes.
And Alan Ball and Dan Minahan remarked that they were more nervous about that than meeting Evan, who is a bona fide movie star.
Yes. So. They were like, why is the crew so different today and acting so weird and cautious? They thought it was Evan. And the crew was like, no, there's shells everywhere.
We're going to break something.
We could break this set.
So again, but talking about this like story meeting, the creative meeting, all these aspects, you know, all of this is here to support who Sophie Ann is, what her kind of backstory is and how she features into this. So we have this idea that this is a day room.
Yeah.
She's obsessed with sunlight.
Yeah.
We hear birds, you know. Yes. There's an artificial soundtrack for her beach room. There's dioramas that make it look like daylight. And all of this are just little hints towards what she's up to.
Uh-huh. And let's play my other fabulous. They're all the lines are fabulous.
Less than 2 hours till dawn. Shall we have sex? Kidding. I haven't enjoyed sex with men since the Eisenhower administration.
It's only on a vampire show.
Only. Oh, it's so good.
I mean, it's just great. And I think, you know, getting her age in there is like a badge of honor.
Yeah.
Her boldness.
Yeah.
You know, I think I wrote she's more Marie Antoinette than Elizabeth the First.
Yes. Know? Yes. Yeah. She says that line where someone is it something about bad? And she goes, first of all, there is no bad.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, oh, that's so good.
Yeah. But she's, you know, she has that. No, there's that long pause, you know, before she says kidding, because she has this power, which is scary, right? Vampires have this crazy hierarchy where they can kind of just make each other do stuff
based
on authority and age, which we don't even have in human world.
Yeah, right, like, right.
You know, you can't just go like, I'm older, I'm telling you to do this thing.
Totally.
Or, you know, I'm your queen, we made it up, and now I, you know, can tell you. So they have these really strict, interesting hierarchies.
Yeah.
And so she's scary to him, I think.
Yeah.
And clearly we see that he owes her something.
Yeah.
She assumes she'll meet Sookie.
Yeah.
We meet Hadley, played by Lindsay Hahn, who is Sookie's cousin. Yeah. It's interesting she's there. So, you know, this is a real pivotal scene in the story.
It is.
The ongoing story of Sookie Stackhouse.
Yeah, there is a lot in this scene as you keep watching the show that we will see.
So my highlight, which will come as no surprise to anyone, is the Fortenberry family drama.
It's ridiculously good.
The Tennessee Williams play that happens in the middle of this episode is so fun. Obviously, in no small part to Jim and Dale, who are just, I mean, spectacular. I mean, I'm going to kind of lean into Dale because she's doing like the heavy lifting of this episode, I think. I mean, she is mean. Mm-hmm. She's prejudiced, but somehow I still feel such sympathy for her.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe some of that's in Jim's court. Mm-hmm. You know, he loves her despite all of this venom that she's spewing. But I see this single mother. I see this woman who's kind of hasn't been loved the way a person should be loved ever. You know, she's funny. But she doesn't pull her punches. You know, some people playing mean characters feel like they have to temper it so you won't hate them. But boy, does Dale just lean in.
She does. I'm trying to think of why I was rooting for her because it is pretty intense and awful. I wonder if I was imagining it's why we enjoy Pam so much because it's that moment of release where you say all the pent up shit of your whole life.
Yeah.
You know, and you just go, fuck it. You know what? Your dad didn't die in an accident. And you know what? I've been stuck here taking care of, because, you know, what does Jim say? Something like, I have to take care of you. She's like, oh, please. You didn't let me have any fun.
Right. Well, so this is one of my favorite lines kind of this show.
Yeah.
I've already let too much bad happen to you.
You haven't let enough bad happen to me.
Oh, I mean, Alan Ball meets Tennessee Williams right there.
Right there.
And you feel a longing in her,
yeah.
I think. A longing to have had a more spectacular life.
Yeah.
But her life hasn't been. She didn't have a great love affair.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, we start to reveal so much about her relationship with Hoyt's father and the pain that his father must have been in his whole life.
Mm-hmm.
So here's another sort of favorite clip of mine. Dale, again, I think leans into that mean, hurt side of Maxine.
Daddy was a hero.
Daddy was a secret drinker. And you want to know what I really think? A closet homosexual. That man just liked to dance more than a normal man should.
I mean, it's, again, it's funny. And it's awful and sad. I mean, to get so many layers
Right.
And you can only get that if you don't pull back, right?
Right.
Dale has to be full on the throttle.
Yes.
For that line to work on all those levels.
I mean, Dan Minahan and our director in the commentary said something like he was never ceased to be amazed at how these actors ground the performances.
Yeah.
And we use these words so much. I don't want them to lose meaning. It's so crucial.
It really is. You know, it was interesting listening to them talk. And again, I think why so many people on the show are from theater or from sitcoms or, you know, things that require big leaps of faith.
Right, right.
Is that this feels in many ways more like ancient Greek theater,
right?
Where the gods will come down and smite you, right? Like that's what this season is about.
Yes.
We're trying to summon a god,
right?
You know, and it needs that kind of level of belief.
Yeah.
You know, as Queen Sophie Anne would say.
Yeah, and it's like,
you know, never underestimate the power of blind faith.
Yes, because it's not like they're reaching and going fantastical or big or surface.
Mm-hmm.
It's deep.
Yes,
it's like,
exactly.
You know, where she, the way she says that line of, you haven't let enough bad happen to me. It's like, she doesn't just say, oh, you haven't let enough bad happen to me.
No.
She
grounds it.
Right?
Yeah.
It's like a sponge, like just squeezing every last drop out of that sponge. It's delicious.
And it is. In that moment, I go, oh, wait, let her have some fun.
Totally. Let her go. You know? Let her go.
Let her go. And similarly, right now, because Hoyt is now the product of two very unhappy people.
Yeah.
And, you know, really just searching for his own little bit of happiness and light.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he starts this episode by choosing his mother over his new girlfriend.
Mm-hmm.
And I wonder, as he's kind of learning about his family history, if that's starting to feel like maybe he made the wrong
choice. In hindsight, that might not have been... Yeah, because he was...
I mean, I did bite her, which is, you know...
Well, yeah.
A faux pas.
Sure. By the way, good primal scream.
Thank you.
Yeah. Very good painful primal scream.
So the last sort of episode highlight that we want to share with you is, of course, Haunted Grant's house. We have a couple of just incredible shout outs to get through here. First, of course, is Patricia Bethune as Jane Bodehouse cutting off her own finger.
Oh, my gosh. So good.
I mean, just like Dale, you know, it's the commitment.
Yeah.
We have John Billingsley as Mike Spencer on the floor cuddling with Sookie.
Yep. Committed.
Do you want to tell the story behind the frying pan?
Yeah. So Alan said in the commentary that he was a guest star, I guess, on 6 Feet Under, and his wife had killed him because he was so boring but would never shut up, which is a bad combination. So he would endlessly with these stupid stories, and she finally killed him with a frying pan. So that was a nod to that fabulous performance.
And then the gentleman in Sookie's bedroom trying on her sundresses is actually Lenny, one of our stand-in crew.
Lenny. I was like, oh my gosh, Lenny. It's so good to see him. What does he say? Because then Anna, they have a funny exchange there.
I can't remember exactly what it is, but it's something like, you think it's too much?
Yeah, and she goes,
like that,
yeah, it's a little too much. She just closes the door and moves on. That was a funny interview.
Well, he's wearing her dress.
Yeah. And then they did mention in the commentary, Rutina was also doing the commentary with Alan and Dan, and she said it was so fun destroying stuff, just making a mess.
I love scenes like that. They just give you things to throw.
Yes. It's
so great.
Fun, because you never get to do that, I was going to say as an adult, but your whole life. I mean, starting at age two, it's like, what did you break? You know? So they just broke that room up.
It looks great.
And now for a quick bite, True Blood 101 Supernatural Wrap Up.
Twenty-three episodes in, and here's what we've learned so far.
Vampires have no heartbeat and need not breathe, but they do have reflections, orgasms, and haircuts. They can't tolerate sunlight, but garlic is okay. Crosses and holy water do nothing, but silver hurts like the dickens. Their blood can heal and get people high. Oh, and Eric can fly.
Shapeshifters run a little hot, which is good because they spend a significant amount of time in the nude. They require an animal to imprint on in order to shift, unless they are totally stressed out, and they could possibly lay and then eat their own eggs, but that's merely speculative.
Maenads are mortal beings that desire a god who never comes and can vibrate people into submission, but really, they just want a party. Oh, and they believed themselves into existence. Now that's a nifty party trick.
Were creatures are confirmed real, though we know little about them, but we'll venture a guess that they're probably hunky.
Meanwhile, Sookie hears people's thoughts, can shoot light from her hands, and tastes really good. But no classification. As of yet.
You make me so happy I never had any of you.
Oh, come on, Pam. They're funny. They're like humans, but miniature. Teacup humans.
So, for our deep dive topic today, I thought we might chat a little bit about working with teacup humans, with child actors, because it also happens to coincide with the return of Pam!
Woohoo!
She's back, she's looking fabulous, she's got some great lines and some Swedish.
Oh my goodness, some Swedish.
So really interesting in this scene, you get to work with two child actors, which is a unique experience. There's so many rules and regulations that monitor and protect how children work in the entertainment industry.
Yeah.
Do you remember anything about working with Alec and Laurel, who played Kobe and Lisa?
You know, I wish that I did. And I wonder, you know, they were just so wonderful. They were so,
they were
so great.
Professional.
But, you know, there is the rule you work for 2 hours at a time and they have a break. And so there will be kids who are going to school.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, you'll work around that, do other things, do other coverage, and then they're back. And the main memory I have from that day is that freaking Swedish, which is, and probably like I just said, freaking, but I'm always, you know, trying to not. Fucking, oops, sorry, you know, do that all day.
When the kids are on set, you're trying to be extra careful, make sure that it is a safe space for them.
Yeah.
So I imagine that must have been hard on a show where we're all very used to being mature.
Yes. And I haven't been mature since I was 4. That's when I first said that word. No one knows where I learned it.
Oh, that's funny.
You know, it's very hard for me to be around the little teacup humans and speak Swedish. But yeah, tell us more about this, Deb.
Well, yeah. So we have Alec Gray and Laurel Weber. They played Kobe and Lisa Fowler. Interestingly enough, True Blood, at least per the internet, is both of their last acting jobs.
So interesting.
They did all 7 seasons. They stuck with us through the end. So they must have enjoyed the job to some extent, but did not continue acting.
So interesting.
But yeah, so that's, I think that's really interesting. With that, Alec has been in a couple other things before True Blood. How I Met Your Mother, My Name is Earl, and he got his start in The Office for 2 episodes. But I really did take a deep dive into child actor labor laws. The Scully in me had free reign, and I looked through the California Department of Industrial Relations, which has
a
very detailed pamphlet, which I put in quotes because it's 66 pages long.
Oh, my goodness.
You know, if you can still call it a pamphlet.
I don't think that's a pamphlet anymore. Maybe it started out as a pamphlet.
Maybe. But it details all of the child labor laws in California.
Wow.
So to be a child actor, there are multiple permits required. There are permits required of the parents and guardians. There's permit required of the employers. Wow. Insurance and workers' compensation has to be guaranteed. And there's also, I found this fascinating, a clause in the contract that a child actor may back out of that contract at any time with no consequence.
Wow.
And this is less about protection and more about because someone under 18 isn't legally competent to sign a contract. So it's sort of illegal for them to sign it anyways. Just fascinating.
Right.
But the protections that came in kind of all started with Jackie Coogan. So he's a famous child star from Charlie Chaplin's The Kid.
Okay.
So he made $4 million as a child actor, which we're talking the teens, the, you know, 19 teens.
I mean, what is that today?
I have no idea.
Let's add a zero or two.
It's a ridiculous amount of money, right?
Holy shit. I mean, shoot.
But we are talking about child actors. We're safe space for kids on
yeah,
the set.
Yeah.
But by the time he reached legal maturity, he was bankrupt because essentially all the adults in his life spent his money away.
Oh my gosh.
So in 1939, the Jackie Coogan Law was enacted, which requires producers to place 15% of a child actor's gross receipts into a trust, which is accessible only by that person once they reach legal maturity. So it's a good thing that that exists now.
Wow.
Yeah.
It is tragic, isn't it? Most laws, a lot of laws, come from some tragedy.
Yeah. Yeah. It had to have gone wrong before someone thought to protect.
Right.
But we have, I mean, there's so many protections. We have hours are very restricted, as you were mentioning. A lot of that time has to be split between work and schooling, as well as just rest and recreation. Like there has to be time off for doing nothing while they're there, which is pretty great. But it does mean that as a producer, you have to be very diligent about your hours and when you bring kids in. So, you know, we have three scenes with these child actors this episode. We have in the woods outside of Merlant's. Mm-hmm. That's going to be at Warner Brothers.
Yep.
We have inside Fantasia. So that's going to be down in Long Beach.
Yep.
And we have outside of Fantasia in the car, which they shot on the lot. Mm-hmm. They just put in a different background. And part of why they did that, I'm sure, is because you only get those kids for a very limited amount of time.
Right.
And their work time includes their hair and makeup and their travel. So you're really, it gets, what you can film with them gets eaten up very quickly.
Yep.
And I would not be surprised to hear if you and Alex did your coverage to tennis balls or
yeah,
not real human beings by the end of the day.
We must have. I mean, we've never done a rehearsal in 2 hours, you know? So here in the notes, it's, what is it on schooling? They can only miss five mm-hmm. days or something. And
if they are in traditional school, mm-hmm. They can only take 5 absences of 5 days or less. So that's 25 days total throughout the school year. And then they have to have teachers on set with those kids
yeah.
that are continuing to do education while they're on set. And then a parent or a guardian must be present during filming.
Wow, such an interesting life for a kid, right?
Yeah, well, so you know how, you know, everyone always complains that like newborn babies, they always have the birthing scene and the baby comes out and yes. it's like ginormous and
and covered
not
in goo.
Clearly not a newborn baby.
Yeah.
Well, that's because newborn babies are extraordinarily fragile
right.
and should not be on sets. You
right.
know? Sometimes reality takes a back seat to the safety of people. So the rule surrounding infants is that infants must be at least 1 month old,
mm-hmm.
possibly 15 days. That's the youngest you can get. But that baby had to have been carried to term, be a normal birth weight, and you need a note from a licensed physician
mm-hmm.
in order to do that. And there are even crazy things like the lights can only be a certain brightness. Like it literally mm-hmm. said like the brightness of 100 candles or something like that.
Oh
it
my gosh.
So interesting. And only for 30 seconds at a time. So, you know, whenever you see babies, and we're going to see some babies on the show, whenever you see babies on screen, just know they work for 20 minutes under very special lights
yeah.
with a physician's note, you know, and that's an amazing thing to even have that opportunity.
It is a bizarre thing. So I've worked with infants a couple of times.
Mm.
It's challenging. They have to goop the baby up. And then the baby is screaming and crying.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So.
And they don't know they're acting.
And they don't know they're acting. And they're being passed yeah. around. And then in 2019, I did the series for Raelle Tucker, Sacred Lies, with mm-hmm. Ryan Quanten. And I had young kids. So I think they were between 1 and 2, if I remember right. And again, this baby had to be happy. And the second the mother handed me the baby was crying. And so I,
yeah.
and then they had the handlers in between and they would
yeah.
tell the mom to leave so the baby would get used to me. And I was so desperate to make this baby not scared.
Yeah.
I mean, it was just so, it was traumatic on everybody. It's hard.
It really is. And I think, you know, working with kids is so much of it for them. Now, you know, we were just talking about first instinct versus time.
Right.
For kids, it is that first instinct.
Yeah.
It's that play.
Yeah.
And you only have time again for that first instinct.
Yeah.
And you have to make that space a place where they feel free
mm-hmm.
to really play and really cry and really be there.
Right.
You know, which is why I think, you know, crews, you know, good producers when they have children on set, tell everyone, you know, everyone is on their best behavior. Yeah. Things are kept more quiet. Definitely. They're a little bit slower paced. And safety really becomes the top priority. Safety mm-hmm. for that, obviously, that child's physical being, but also their emotional and mental being.
Yeah,
everyone want it to be a good experience.
Yes, everyone on a deep primordial level is trying to make it a good experience for that that poor kid. And, you know, in this case, Alec and Laurel, a little older, of course, and they're such good actors.
Yes.
And that's an interesting thing too, right? Because when kids are great actors, it just is so natural to them. And other children, it's just not in them. They're very self-conscious, right?
Yeah.
But these kids were so good in these scenes.
Some of it for me, I've never been a fan of like the precocious kid actor, like the little kid actor that's who talks tough. Like a grown-up. I mean, you know,
that is weird.
There are times and places for those stories. But for me, the child actors who are alive and present enough to just be kids.
Yeah.
And I gotta say, I mean, Laurel and Alec just nail that.
They seem nail it.
So their age and so present.
Yeah.
She doesn't jump or overplay it. She when just leans away from him.
Uh-huh.
Just a little bit nervous.
Mm-hmm.
It's just lovely.
Yeah,
I'm sorry they didn't keep acting because they're very good at it.
I know they're very good at it. It's so interesting. I mean, I'm proud of them that they went, they didn't get lured in by the glitz and possibly went to college and said, want to do something
else. It means they had good parents who didn't pressure them, because that's another thing to remember when you're hiring a child actor, you are also bringing their parents into the equation. And
right.
Set. And that energy has to be good and low pressure and in the best interest of the child. And, and so, you know, I've always had pretty positive experiences there, but we've all heard stories of stage parents. And luckily, I think, you know, bringing all that to light has meant there's less of it.
And I am so excited for you to hear this interview with Rutina Wesley.
Yay!
Get ready for me to just cry and laugh more than you've ever heard. So here it is, the beautiful, incomparable, talented, shining, fluid Rutina Wesley.
This is a special one, folks. Rutina.
Hi.
Hi. I can't even stand it.
The only thing that would make this better is if we could be in person. I would just love to give you a hug so much.
I'm hugging you from Louisiana. I love you too so much.
Oh my God. We've been really looking forward to talking with you. This is very emotional for us too.
I've been watching it back and I'm all caught up as far as I think I'm caught up to the third season.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, I cried.
Yeah.
I also was just like, look at how young and beautiful we were.
Oh my God.
No.
It
feels like another lifetime.
The skin was like on point. And you two like were especially making me laugh and just like, I just loved all of the like crazy choices we made as actors and we weren't afraid. Like we could make crazy choices. It's like,
you're right.
I think of True Blood and I think of theater.
Yeah.
And I think I remember Alan Ball like saying to me at one point, he was like, hey, he's like, you know, I hired you for this reason. Go big. Like, go there. And so we got to really be grand and make it make sense. You know what I mean?
Well, he said something lovely about you that I agree with to a T. He said the reason why Rutina was perfect for Tara is that not only did she get the ferocity, but the vulnerability as well. Mm-hmm. That like both of those were present all the time. And he was like, that's how I knew Rutina was perfect.
Alan Ball. That's gonna make me cry. No, it's gonna make because I think about how I got the part. We could talk. I mean, do we want to talk about
that? Let's jump right in. Tell us how you got the part.
So some people know this because it's been out there, but like I auditioned for Tara the very first time around. So I auditioned for the pilot. Mm-hmm. And it was between me and the lovely actress who got it.
Right.
And so I left going, okay, that's not for me. It's cool. Wow. I stopped thinking about it. Wasn't even on my radar anymore. And then I get this call 6 months, like 6 months later. And they're like, God. So they're going to audition for Tara again. And they like you to come in. I was like, no, I've done that. I'm not going back. It's not for me. No.
Oh, my like, God.
You know, like fear in my body. Yeah. And I went back and I will never forget. It was me, between me and five other girls. And one of those women was actresses was Journey Smollett.
Sure.
She came in for Tara. And I remember when she walked in the door, I was like, well, that's it. There goes my role. Like, Journey is here. Like, clearly, clearly I'm not going to get this. And I go in there. I kind of do the same thing that I did before. Like, I didn't really change my choices and stuff. Like, I went in there, did it, came back out. And Libby Goldstein, bless her, she comes out and she goes, okay, ladies, thank you so much. And then she comes over to me and goes, Radina, we want you to stay. And I was like, they can hear you, but okay. So everyone leaves. I'm still there. And I'll never forget, Alan comes out and he goes, just be more vulnerable. Just think about that. And I said, okay, got it. And I went in there. And I did that scene on the porch with me and Sam with the whiskeys. And I just kind of let it all hang out. And it wasn't until like the second or third season that Alan actually said to me, he was like, oh, God, I'm not going to cry. He goes, you were always my first choice. I loved you from the beginning. And, you know, now I have you, you're here, but I want you to know you were always my first choice. And I was like, wow. Like, you know, it was like, you don't expect that at 26, right out of school, you know, and it was insane. You know, I got the part, and it's a testament to that, like, you really never know how stuff is going to go. Because sometimes they may not call you back for a role, but you might still get it.
Right.
Like, you just never really know.
I assumed that your audition scene would have only been the first scene we see you in, where you're in that shopping.
In the Walmart. Shopping center.
The Walmart type, yeah.
Yeah, and you let that woman have it. And Alan said that about your vulnerability. And I thought, how did she get to show it? But that scene with you and Sam on the porch.
I mean, we highlighted it in the first season of the podcast because
right, Deb? That's interesting. That was the scene.
It was so beautiful. I remember when I first auditioned, I'll just put this in there, but I did come in like with props. Like, I was not playing around. Like,
I love
when
it.
I first auditioned in New York, now it was in New York and it was on a tape, but Alan was there.
Oh,
and I came in with my rag on my shoulder. I had an apron.
Yeah.
I was like, this is my part. And then the second time around when I had to re-audition, I remember, and this is kind of key, Alan Ball sat about 8 feet away from me, 7 to 8 feet away from me. And everybody else was like behind him. Mm-hmm. And the whole time I was doing the Super Saber Bunch scene.
Right.
Yeah.
He was pointing at me and laughing hysterically. Pointing. Like, hey, this
Get
is
it,
what I'm talking
people.
About.
Yeah.
And like, I was like, could you not do that? Like, I can see you. I can see you, Alan. Could you please stop pointing at me? But he was like really trying to get these people to like, hey, this is our girl, you know?
Yeah.
Like, but as an actor and as an auditioner, like when you get things like that, like sometimes you don't know how to handle it because I'm like, well, is he laughing like at me or like, is he, and like, he was really cracking up to the point where it was like, if you're not laughing, I need you to get out of this room. Cause this girl was funny.
Right.
And she, and you know, it was like all of those things. And I like, man, I loved it. I think honestly, that was one of my like best auditions I've ever had in my life. Like, it was like, because I got to go back to it. Right. And I got to kind of revisit the character a little bit. And because I knew the material so well already, That second time was just like butter. I just was able to do it so naturally because I already kind of had it in my system. And you don't always get that second chance, you know?
Yes. Oh, rarely do you, But it's amazing how many people we've spoken to are like, this was an incredibly memorable audition. Because like, there are things I've booked that I don't remember the audition for. Right. But somehow we all are like, something about the audition for True Blood, maybe because of Alan, because of the energy in that room, we were given some kind of permission that made all of us feel so present in that moment.
Yeah, Deb went for it too.
Yeah, and,
right?
Nice. I bet you did.
She went for it.
I ate my tears. It was crazy.
It was really incredible. You know, Ritina, I guess we could ask you about, because you do have this unbelievably impressive education. First of all, you're from performing parents. Then you go to a billion different incredible academies and get a degree, including Juilliard and the Royal Academy.
You are clearly the most impressive and intimidating person at that table read. Just based on the credentials.
And then, And now San said in the commentary, she is the hardest working actress. Her scripts are full
most
of notes.
Most prepared.
So you know what? About that my process.
Process,
please. We like the
theater and
behind the scenes. How do you do it stuff?
Yeah.
You know, it's my process has it's definitely changed over the years, but during True Blood, I mean, I read that and I was like, Nelson is hilarious. He's funny, but he's absolutely right. Like I mark all my beats. I make notes. I used to mark what people say about me, how they feel about me, all of that stuff in one script. I did it every script, almost to the point where you could kind of call me a heady actor. I get in my head a lot. So, you know, now I think about myself and I'm like, oh, I've pulled back on that a little bit. It's like, I don't have as many notes. I have them here, but I don't get so frenetic about analyzing the script. I'm more trying to be present and in the moment. But back in True Blood days, I would like write everything down in a feverish way and like make all these notes. And then I would get to set, and sometimes it would really be about just playing with your scene partner, and all those notes would go out the window. So now I'm kind of at that halfway point in my career where it's like a little bit of analysis and a lot of play. And being able to sort of balance out the two things. But Nelson would make fun of me all the time because if he needed to see my script, he was just like, what is all of this? And I was like, shit, it's like, it's my notes. Like, I gotta take notes. And I was like, what are you talking about? He was so funny. And, you know, interestingly enough, he may have been the one person that really kept me on my toes because we went to school together, right? Nice. So I like knew him. And when I got to set that first week where they reshot all the scenes in the pilot and it was just my stuff, me for a week.
The Ritina week. Yes.
The Ritina week.
Wow.
And this is when he coined the phrase hookah.
Wow.
He came into Merlot's and that scene started and he called me hookah. And we did the scene, and afterwards I was like, that's not in the script, Nelson. Could you not do that? That's not in the script. Like, you're going to get me fired. Like, what are you doing? He was like, what you saying, Narutini? Oh, you hookah. I'm going to keep doing it. I was like, keeping you on your toes. And I'm like, you are keeping me on my toes, but wait, what, Nelson, what is my cue? You keep making it up. What is my cue? Like, what are you going to say? And Alan Ball said he was the only person that he would let improv.
Yeah.
Because he said, I can't write that. I can't write what he says.
Yeah.
So he was like, he was fantastic. And I will never forget that because I was so nervous.
Right.
But seeing him and being like, oh, someone who knows me.
Yeah.
Okay. Right. So I'm not crazy. Someone who I can like ask things. And like, it was nice to have him there because Anna made me nervous. I was really nervous with her. I thought she was like, I didn't know if she liked me or not. But he kept me feeling safe, but also, like I said, like on my toes, because he would mess with me in a way to get performances out of me that I didn't know I could have. And only Nelson can do that.
Yeah,
you know what I mean? He was like, he's like, I'm going to just start calling a hookah and see what happens. You know what I mean? Like, that's Yes. That's kind of how it was. So it was fantastic. He was magnificent. Yeah. He's become an icon, I think. You know, that's my guy. Like, I love him so much. I miss him. He plays that character so fluidly, and he's so detailed. It was just so comforting to be on a huge show like this, but to have someone close to you.
Yes.
You know, and I could depend on him to be like, hey, you're doing too much, or, you know, hey, you know, watch this or watch that. And I could trust that as an actor. And he helped me bloom.
Yeah.
You know? Wow. Yeah.
That's incredible. What an incredible arc to go from, like, you auditioned. Cool. I'm letting it go. We want you back. Well, maybe I don't want to come back. All right. I'll come back. And then you get it. And then it's the routine a week, right? Because they got to reshoot everything. That's a lot of pressure.
It is.
It's a lot of pressure. Yeah.
And everyone else has kind of met and found their energy a little bit.
Right.
So I imagine that's sort of hard to find your space, you know?
Yeah. And just your isolated scenes intensely, you know, not like a normal rollout. So, and that's so incredible. And the words you use for Nelson in the show, I'm writing down all your words and they are so good.
Well, fluid and detailed. I agree. That is a very apt way of describing how Nelson feels when you watch his work.
Magnificent, shining, fluid.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, that's you too, Rutina.
It is.
That's
you too.
I mean, it is. It really is. And especially with the challenging material that was written for Tara. I mean, throughout all of the seasons, but, you know, I mean, we're talking about specifically 1 and 2 right now, but oh my gosh. Sometimes I'll watch a scene after and just be like, how do you even start?
Okay.
to go in that direction, you know, with this, and then choices that, you know, it started in one place and I'm like, how did she think to take it there? And it must be in all of that scribble on the page.
It wasn't all the scribble. Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Just really remarkable.
Right. I mean, we talk about so much. I mean, you and Anna, your two characters, Suki and Tara, may have had the most difficult, and Nelson, but truly agonized. I mean, the writers really tortured your characters. For 7 years, you three were tortured. I mean, I get exhausted watching it. So I'm glad that my character stood there and just said a couple of cool lines, you know. But, I mean, even in just these two seasons, you have a really difficult relationship with your mother, which we want to ask you about. You know, that working relationship with Adina, who we interviewed, everyone adores you that just worked with you. Mishka, you know.
Mishka!
Oh, she was like, oh my God, I love that girl.
Yeah.
And that, you know, so tough because that's the family arc, right? You know, this child of an alcoholic, brutal, deep wounds with your mother. And then Marianne, all through season 2, plays on that, even plays on Gran, being Gran in Suki's house, and manipulates you into thinking you have family again.
Mm-hmm.
Wow, Rutina. So how did you feel about mounting that enormous horse?
They're balancing the intimidation with the challenge and opportunity. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, well, I had Adina Porter as my mother, so it wasn't hard because she gave me every last strain of drop of everything that she has.
Wow.
That woman acts with her entire soul. And so all I needed to do was to look her in the eye and like I was in. And speaking of, you know, if you think of episode 211 with the whole frenzy of all the eyes and Tara sort of being in a trance and then not in a trance.
Yeah.
Like having Adina and Nelson there for that for me was like the best because again, two people I feel really safe with. I mean, me and Adina had a connection from day one and I looked up to her as an actress who had been doing it for some time.
Yes.
And she poured into me as a young actor. And gave me great advice. She supported me. And I remember, you know, that second season like was really challenging because of all of the Marianne storyline. It was so tough to do.
Yes.
And I remember just being like, well, it has to be real to you.
Mm, right.
Your eyes are black. You're praying to this crazy god. Lolo Romeo's. I was like, oh, that part was really hard. I was like, what am I saying? I was like, oh my god.
Like ancient Greek isn't in your special skills. No.
It's not. So I was like, what dead is
language.
This?
You don't speak any dead languages.
Oh. You know, and yes. It was like, what would you do if, you know, three of the people that you love the most, you feel like they've betrayed you?
Right.
Like, really, Tara feels really betrayed in her spell.
Yes.
And so I think that allows for the nasty sort of raw response that you get from Tara when she goes from like, I want to fucking kill you to, oh my God, mama, I'm sorry. And all this stuff.
Yeah. It's that like, one, you know, scene, the turns you make in that one scene, because that's really hard as an actor. You know, it's easier if you start a scene crying.
Right.
So this is like,
yeah,
you go from I'm going to kill you to sobbing to someone reads your mind, then you're reborn. I mean, it's the crazy. It's like the Olympics for actors.
It was. I got to show, you know, I really got to show a good range, I think, of the things that I could do.
Yes.
You know, and I also think, though, there were other times, you know, in the seasons where I feel like they didn't quite know what to do with Tara.
Right.
So I felt like I was kind of like hanging back, like, oh, you know, but that was a season where I really felt like I was really working my muscles as an actor. And again, I had Anna and Steven and Nelson there, and Adina were all there to like support me in my craziness, because I was like, I'm about to go there and I hope you guys are okay with it, but I'm about to go there, you know? And I remember one time Anna was like, okay, like, ooh, that was, ooh, you went there. I was like, yeah. I don't like you. So this is what I'm going to do. You know, it was special because I do feel like they let the crazy in. They were like, we're here for it. Mm-hmm. We are here for the crazy.
Yeah.
You know, I think about, oh God, the orgies. Like, oh my God. Like, I was like, I remember reading that script, Deborah, and was like, all right, so, so we're taking off. Oh, okay. Oh no, clothes are still on. But we're going to, in the woods, we're going to do this. And it was Michael Ruscio. I think that was his episode. I remember him being at like 2:00 in the morning. He's like, all right, guys, just so you know, we're all out here together. Okay. We're doing this together. So let's get this done. Like, it's negative 19 degrees.
It's freezing. Literally freezing. It's
freezing.
Yes.
And we're going to get this orgy done. And I remember being like, looking up to the sky like, God, what am I doing? Is this okay? I hope this is okay. Because I feel like I'm about to like go someplace that I'm not supposed to go. But I'm going to do it. And we like got it done. And when you watch it back, it's fantastic.
It's fantastic.
I got to do all of that stuff, you know, with Tara. Yeah. And I felt like Tara was very close to me, especially when it came to like how she was raised and her family and stuff. Like, I felt close to some of that storyline. Yeah. But I do feel like acting can be, you know, we heal with our art as being storytellers. And I found that some things for me and my family, I've healed from by playing Tara.
Wow.
It gave me the impetus to sort of speak to my family and speak my truth and speak to my parents and not be afraid. I felt like Tara was like a superhero, man. Like, I felt like I could do anything sometimes with her. She really was.
The beauty of this show, we had supernatural people who, I guess, had real superpowers. But the humans, because Tara, you know, didn't read minds, but like, she's had superpowers. Like, she really did. In the way that spectacular human beings do, you know? So I really appreciated that the humans felt very powerful to me on the series, especially watching it back now.
I remember Alan saying one time, like, she was maybe, he thought of her as the voice of reason on the show. And the sort of, you know, if one person is telling the truth, it's Tara. And when I look back and I was watching it back, I was like, yeah, when you listen to what comes out of her mouth sometimes, it's truth. Like, she's really trying to be truthful with everything, you know? She
did. And when I think that sometimes that meant the writers had to work extra hard to fool Tara, because this is the whole thing with Marianne season 2. Marianne has to find ways to manipulate Tara, but Tara has been written so smart and so skeptical and so, ready to see to see truth that they work so hard to find the cracks in Tara Thornton so that we really believe that Marianne could do it. And I'm consistently impressed with the writing and your performance of it, because at no point do I go, Tara would see past that. They really, the team of them and you sell me on the idea that Marianne could get into Tara's head that way.
Yeah.
I was just about to say that, Deborah, Marianne gets into her head, her soul in a way.
Yeah. Gets into her soul.
And places of Tara's soul that Tara doesn't want to deal with or talk about. And so that's where she Marianne hooks in, because then she gives Tara that fear.
Mm-hmm.
And then, and then Tara is moving fear-based because Marianne is in that really dark place that Tara doesn't want to talk about.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And so because even for instance, when she comes out of the spell, Tara is still like, where's Eggs? Yeah. Like, I got to go. And she wants to go immediately to save him. Yeah. And it's like, you don't see Tara sort of come out of it, because Tara is still, in a way, when she comes out of it, she's still not in reality. Mm, right. She's still kind of swept up in what she thinks is love and acceptance and what she thinks is family. Oh,
God, it's so heartbreaking because we want it so badly for Tara. Everything Marianne says, I'm like, God damn it. Why can't she be real? You know? We just talked about this line where she says, you know why I'm good to you? Because it makes you bloom. And like, we're all weeping. Because
you deserve it.
All we
and
want.
It makes you bloom like a flower. And I'm like, I would crumble if someone said that to me today in my living room.
We want Tara to be supported and believed in and lifted up in all of those ways. And it's just so heartbreaking that she's
a
maenad.
Freaking
right. And you know, and Mishka was like one of my favorites because she's somebody like, she really is going to show up and she's going to give you everything.
Yeah.
Like, she's not going to give you half. Right. She's going to give you everything. Yeah. And I remember sometimes that Mishka would look at me and she would go, look at you with those doe eyes. She always called me doe eyes. Aww. And that would always make me, get a little emotional because I don't know. She was just really supportive. Yeah. She really was just like, made me feel great, man. Yeah. And I felt like I could fly with her, you know? And, I can't believe I'm getting so emotional, but, that's cause I miss all of you.
Yeah, no,
but she just really made me feel like I could fly and that I was capable of anything. And coming from a woman who's been around in this business and done so many things as a young woman, for me, it was like, she sees me.
Right. Mm. And
Mishka sees me. She sees Retina.
She does.
And I kind of I was messing with that because I was okay, I not many people see me right away, but I felt like right away when Mishka met me, she was like, I see you.
Yeah.
Like, you're this.
Yeah.
And look at you in them doe eyes. Oh, and you're just so all of this stuff. And I was just like, I was looking around like, how do you see that? I'm not giving that to you.
Right.
But I was.
Right.
But I was.
Right.
I thought I had this wall up. But it's not, I didn't with her. She saw right past the wall, came right in my face and saw me in my eyes. And so I love Mishka and I could do a million plays with her. I could do a million things with her. She is just, she's just very unique and special. And I want to talk about for one second, she was a great leader on set.
Okay.
I remember she didn't take no BS. Mm. She didn't take no stuff.
Wow.
She was really serious about people being professional, and that went for jokes that were not professional, unpleasant jokes.
Okay.
She really kind of put her foot down and was like, we're not going to do that. Not on my time.
Wow. Interesting.
And remember we had the $5 jar or the jar?
Yes.
Remember the jar? Yes. You had to put money in the jar if you made a really nasty joke or something.
I didn't know about that.
I forgot.
Yeah, it was. Or was it cussing? Or the cussing and the joke?
I think it was just the joke. It couldn't have been that. We'd have made millions.
I know. Couldn't have been a cussing.
That star would have been so huge. Yeah.
We could have budgeted an eighth season all on our own if it was cussing.
Yeah. So another question is that one where when you think of your experience on True Blood, I wrote down so many great words you said, but do you have three words that come to mind?
Yeah. Magical chaos laughter.
Perfection.
Because listen, some of those scenes, girls, that we've done, you know, we were on our asses laughing more than we were shooting.
We were
most of the time. Because it was like it was so funny. And I remember, you know, even with like the black eyes and stuff, like that orgy night, like that night, like everybody, Mishka, me, and everybody was like, what is happening? Like everybody was like, you know, it was so funny. So I just, laughter is, when I think about True Blood, I think about laughter.
Me too.
I think about the chaos. Yeah. And then I think that the fact that we were magical, like what we did was magic.
Yeah.
We couldn't believe we were doing what we were doing.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, it was, again, like, I know, I'm sure you guys got your script sometimes and were like, okay, you know, like, what? Yeah. But we did it.
We did it. And it aired.
Yeah. Yeah. And the one thing I love is that no one on our show, even guest stars, like everybody was in on it. Like everybody was ready to get in there. And get in the mud. It was wonderful. It was absolutely wonderful.
Oh my God. It was wonderful and almost indescribable because you described it so well.
Yeah.
Well, you are wonderful, Regina. Thank you so much for chatting with us and sharing all of your stories.
Thank you. Yeah.
Everyone listening at home, gosh, you just got a real treat because this is amazing.
Yeah. I know. I laughed. I cried.
This was magical chaos and laughter.
This interview was.
Yes, it was. Thank you, ladies. Thank you so, so much.
Thank you. Deb.
I just adore her. I mean, this is no offense meant to anyone else that we've spoken to for this season, but that interview hit me in so many different ways.
I know.
It was funny. It was heartfelt. I don't cry quite as easily as you do, but I cried at least three or four times this one.
I mean, I'm dehydrated. I cried so much.
I know. I mean, she's magic. She's magic. Yeah. And gosh, I wish I had gotten a chance to work with her more on the show. You know, I was one
I
of the,
so
we definitely
lucky.
Had a few scenes, but I didn't get to really go deep with her. You
I know,
the
I
way.
Got to go deep with
you
her.
You got to go deep, Kristen.
I did.
Amazing.
I did. Oh, I love her. I miss her. Yeah. For some reason, she like really, in this interview, she was there the whole 7 years. She was like right at the center of every year's storyline.
Yeah.
Like talking to her really took me back to True Blood.
It really did.
Yeah.
Next week on Truest Blood, we tackle the finale episode of season 2. And boy, oh boy, is it big. Everyone has showed up for Marianne's big day except the groom. So we'll find out if he finally comes.
It's such a big episode. It's so amazing. We have a queen of the screen with us next week.
Oh, hell
tune
yeah.
Tune in for Michelle Forbes. I'm going to cry. Yeah. She plays Maynard Marianne to perfection with 73 credits to her name. We can only give you a taste of her illustrious career. She has 2 Emmy nominations on her belt and with more on the way, I am sure.
Yes. Well, she's recently appeared on Big Sky and New Amsterdam and next week on Truest Blood.
Yeah.
So thanks for listening, Truebies. Subscribe and follow wherever you listen to your podcasts and we'll see you next week.
Y'all come back now, you hear.
Got any burning questions you want answered on Truest Blood? Post them on any and all social media platforms using hashtag FangClubQuestions, and we may feature them on the show. That's hashtag FangClubQuestions.
Truest Blood is produced by Safe Haven for HBO Max. Executive producers are Janina Gavankar, Kristen Bauer, and Deborah Ann Wool. Our producer is Gabrielle Galan, and our audio producer is Christopher Wool. Our theme song was recorded just for this podcast by Jace Everett. Additional music was composed by Timo Chen. And remember, you can watch all of the original episodes of True Blood on HBO Max.